Scott Arneal, he was the head coach of the Moose too, and I was going back, and he, I remember him saying to me, it's like, Glennie, like, anyone can run a drill. You have to actually teach the skill if you want to set yourself up as a skills coach. And that always resonated with me. Like, I can't just run a drill, right? You have to, there has to be teaching to it. There has to be a purpose to it. And the expertise I have is that ability to pick three things that I want to see in a drill and then hammer that home. It's like, if that's not there, we're stopping the drill and we're doing it till you get it. There might be other things that are missing, but we're going to worry about that later.
That was longtime skills coach Glenn Carnegie, and you are listening to the Up My Hockey Podcast with Jason Podolin. Welcome to Up My Hockey with Jason Podolin, where we deconstruct the NHL journey, discuss what it takes to make it, and have a few laughs along the way. I'm your host, Jason Podolin, a 31st overall draft pick who played 41 NHL games, but thought he was destined for 1,000. Learn from my story and those of my guests. This is a hockey podcast about reaching your potential. Hello there, and welcome back, or welcome to the Up My Hockey Podcast with Jason Podolin. I am your host, Jason Podolin, and we are here for episode, I'm going to get this wrong, I think it's 132 or 133. I didn't check the notes before I pressed record here, but we're into the 130s, I know that, and I know that you are going to like this podcast. If you are into getting better, if you are into improving your game on the ice, who better to listen to than someone who has been teaching it at the highest level for over a decade now? Glenn Carnegie hails from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and got his start in the skills coaching spectrum with the Manitoba Moose. So started as a really interesting story, actually. Started with gyms and strength and conditioning area, and then moved into skill development. In researching the episode, I looked up Glenn, and I just automatically assumed that he would have had some type of, you know, pro or higher pro hockey experience as a skills coach, and he didn't. He did play hockey, and he did play overseas. He said it just wasn't showing in Hockey DB. Did play a little bit of minor or lower level pro in Europe. But then got this job with the Manitoba Moose, was around the game, obviously knows the game well enough to teach it, was a student of it, and started working with the Moose. And then as the Moose became affiliated with Vancouver, he got moved up to Vancouver with the coaching staff that got hired. There was a good relationship there. And then he became the Vancouver Canucks on the ice guy and grew his role there, being there for over 11 years at the highest league in the world, teaching skill to the best players in the world. And really enjoyed the conversation. I mean, he's super honest about let's call it a humble start, which I think is great, because how he approaches his own craft of how to make people better is how he approaches his own life about how he made himself better and how he got prepared for these NHL players and how he got prepared for playing or teaching AHL players and provide value to them and to do the job the best that he could. And I think for me, how you do one thing is how you can do anything. And I do 100% believe in that philosophy. And it's one of the things that I do when I'm working with the athletes I'm working with it as well, is like, what is the process to getting better? And Glenn applied that to his own craft, which then he shows by example to those who he's working with, and he's also able to deliver a product on the ice. And we get into it. We get into all things skill development. We get into his philosophy. We get into some of the superstars that he worked with that showed some great gains. We get into some of the things that he likes to teach and some of the programs that he likes to do. We get into the intricacies of how he worked with Vancouver Canuck players and what those what the areas looked like and the time spent with them and these types of things. And we just have a good old-fashioned hockey conversation. Glenn lives down the road from me, about 45 minutes to an hour. we've definitely heard of each other before, but we'd never had the opportunity to meet or have a conversation. So it was fun to get on a call with Glenn and just talk hockey. We have a lot of similar philosophies, especially when it comes to skill development. I do skill development work here in Vernon, and we kind of geek out a little bit on skating for a while and like the foundational fundamental pieces of skating and how people, parents, even players, they want to have these elaborate, or maybe thinks it's better to have these elaborate types of drills and these progressions that accelerate really fast, when in all actuality, when you get the basics down and you work and continue to work on these basics, the fundamentals, that is the thing that allows you to grow these games. So not getting in a rush. You know, I totally think about the story that a previous guest told when he went to watch Kobe Bryant train at 4:30 in the morning. And if you guys aren't Kobe Bryant fans, maybe you don't know about his work ethic and his practice habits, but he was widely respected for kind of being a guy that worked harder than anyone else. He believed if you got up at 4 in the morning and had a workout before everyone was up, then he gets two extra workouts or an extra workout in a day, and he would be doing 3 to 4 workouts a day in the off season compared to everyone else's maybe 1 or 2. And he was playing the long game, that the more effort that you put in over a longer period of time, the higher your window and the higher your trajectory. The sports psychologist actually he was not a sports psychologist, but he was a trainer, went to go watch Kobe practice at 4:30 in the morning. At the time, he was the best player in the world. And he said for an hour, he watched Kobe do the most fundamental basic dribbling patterns that he could believe. And I was just kind of blown away by the basicness of what this guy was doing. And when he talked to him, Kobe said, you know, that's where the magic is. You have to master the fundamentals. No matter how good you are, you need to still keep working on them. So how does that apply to hockey? Well, inside edge drills, outside edge drills, pivot drills, skating drills, stride drills. These things don't go out of style. The question is, do you have, you know, the mental toughness to be able to find value in that and be willing to do that? And how does that parlay into the skill coach aspect? Is, do you have enough belief in yourself and what you're doing that you're not trying to jump into these, fast progressions, these really dynamic, multi-layered drills, thinking that this is now I'm the shiniest new penny as the skills coach, instead of dealing with what is right in front of you and working on those fundamentals. So I really enjoyed that aspect of the conversation. There's a lot in here. I mean, I enjoy most of these conversations, of course, or else I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, but this was a real fun one. It was nice to chat with someone like Glenn, who's really approachable, super humble. He's a straight shooter and gives you an answer to the question. So I'll pass you off to our conversation with Glenn Carnegie, the skills coach of the Vancouver Canucks for 11 years, currently the skills coach of the Kelowna Rockets of the WHL, and also working in a coaching and skill development capacity with the JPHL out here in the Okanagan. So without further ado, I give you Glenn Carnegie. All right, here we are. I don't even know what episode it is. I should have looked at that. I think 132 or something, Glenn, but welcome to the podcast, Mr. Glenn Carnegie.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, awesome. We were just kind of joking before we got on that we've never officially met yet, living in the valley together and super connected to hockey, both of us. So it seems a little bit weird, but it's awesome we have this opportunity to chat.
I'm sure we've crossed paths many times without knowing it. So yeah, I've heard lots about you. So it's awesome. Nice to finally meet you.
Hopefully it's good stuff.
Yeah, mostly.
Perfect. So yeah, man. We crossed paths, just for the listeners. I got this tournament called the UMH 68, and there's a thing called the my watch list, because it's tough to see every player in the province. And we're trying to identify who the top 2010s are, and a player that played for Glenn submitted, and so Glenn was the reference. So then we got on the phone call, and now here we are on a podcast. So super cool. Maybe we can start there, Glenn. I want to go back and touch on the 11 years as the Canucks skills coach, but right now you're wearing the hat of a coach and skill development guy at the JPHL. So how did that all come about?
They approached me and asked if I'd be interested in doing it, and I was out here in the Okanagan, and I, you know, when I left NHL, I really wanted to go back and work with young kids and be a little bit more settled, and you know, I was getting a little bit done with all the travel and everything, so it was a great fit for me, and I really believe in the development model that they have, and felt I could be a good fit there. So it's really been exciting. And again, I think, you know, the JPHL is 2 years in, and they've done an amazing job with the league itself, with the quality of players. And they just built this brand new facility in Edmonton, which is amazing. So yeah, it's been a really good experience so far.
Cool. Well, maybe that's a good opportunity to talk about the JPHL. I know, I mean, you're hired by them. I don't believe you're part of the ownership or anything, correct?
No.
Yeah. So as far as what they're doing, and maybe, this listenership, my listenership is Jen, you know, it's definitely nationwide and 32 yeah. countries or something. But, I mean, there's a lot yeah. of people listening in Western Canada. So maybe we can yep. talk about what the Junior Prospects Hockey League is all about.
Yeah, and I think it's just, you know, another opportunity to give the kids more opportunity to develop. And again, so with the JPHL, we play every second weekend. So for me, like, you get a lot more time of ice time and practice time and actual development. It's very similar to the academies in the CSSHL, where, you know, they our kids at in Kelowna, they do their schooling online. And then they skate for an hour and a half every day and train every day. So it gives you a lot of development time, which I think is a really important facet to your hockey development.
Yeah. And well, it's exactly kind of right up your alley, obviously, with what you're doing. So with the JPHL, they're in that group in West Kelowna, are you, I believe you're the head coach of one of the groups. Then are you doing skills for all the teams?
Yeah, I was doing, worked with the U15 team primarily, but was out on the ice with all the other teams doing a lot of power skating. You know, the plan next year is to have me even more with the other teams. It kind of, we had a coach that walked away from the U15 at the last minute there to take a job with the Anaheim Ducks as a scout. So I kind of said I would take that task, and didn't get as out with the other teams as much as I wanted to, but going forward, I think the plan is for me to get out with them at least once a week to do power skating and stuff like that. So
awesome. So when I was hockey DBing you, I gotta yeah. be honest, I was expecting to see some type of a hockey resume, right? Like playing yeah. somewhere. Is that right that you didn't play junior or
well yeah or I did it I did in Manitoba, and then I went and played in Germany for 3 years in the lower leagues in Germany. Yeah. And then, yeah, I was just playing in the sometime in the MJHL and the MMJHL in Manitoba. Awesome. So a good Manitoba guy. So, you know, but I'm also pretty old, so that stuff wasn't too prevalent back in the day.
Right. Yeah. So where are you from in Manitoba?
Winnipeg.
Oh, Winnipeg.
Yeah, so grew up in Winnipeg. Yeah. And, you know, that's where I started my hockey development. I had a training facility there called Focus Fitness. And then I was working with the Manitoba Moose and worked my way up to the NHL. And so it's kind of gone full circle now and kind yeah. of getting, again, back to working with the kids. And so awesome. I really enjoy it.
So you were playing in Germany and as your playing career then I guess was winding down, like, did you know that was something you wanted to get involved in? Like, was the next phase for you was that development or strength and conditioning?
No, not at that point. I actually went back to Winnipeg and I was gonna go into law school, and I found that was way too much reading for me, so and then I wanted to get into sports psychology. I love the hockey mindset and that aspect of it, so I was going back and exercise sports science, and there was an old buddy I'd played hockey against. He's a couple years older than me, and he had just started a gym, and he was starting to work with hockey players, and just asked if I wanted to go out and start helping them. And so I did that, and I loved it right away. I was working with like AAA type players at the time, and yep. The young, like 13, 14 year olds up to some midget guys. And then after I was done school, I bonded the company and it kind of grew from there. And those midget guys was like Jonathan Taves was in there. We had Travis Zajac, you know, the Zajac, there's four of the brothers. We had all those guys. And so we had a good group of guys that all came up together. Like, you know, Cam Barker was back in there, and right. Nigel Dawes and Darren Helm, all those guys were all the Winnipeg guys coming up at the time.
That's cool. That's a great group to be working with.
Yeah, it was fun. Colton Orr was in there as well, and he was always a lot of fun.
Cool.
That's funny. Yeah.
Those names that you're mentioning, and that obviously helps in what you're doing. In
for sure.
You know, having these guys go on to play, and you were a piece of that development.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely doesn't hurt. So what was how do you think that you got your foot in the door with the Moose? Like, how did that all happen?
Well, we actually were doing so my business partner was called Focus Fitness, and my business partner Jeff Wood, who is still in Winnipeg doing training there. We've kind of built different facilities. We started in a dressing room at a community club, Gateway Community Club in Winnipeg. And then we built and went to Winnipeg Winter Club. And in that time, we started an adult hockey program.
Yeah.
And Mark Chipman, who was then the owner of the Moose, now the owner of the Jets, was in that group. And they were building the new facility, the MTS Center or Bell Center, whatever it's called now. And so we ended up talking to him about the opportunity to work with the Moose, and we wanted to put a facility within that MTS Center. So just through talking to him and meeting with him, and then we met with who was the Canucks GM at the time? I can't remember now, but so then we met with him, and he obviously, their thought was, well, we're not going to pay you, but we'll, you know, you can say you're the Moose strength coaches and all that. And we said that wouldn't work, but then Mark Chipman stepped up and said, no, we want you guys to do it. And because he had trained with us, and he knew the guys we were working with, because, you know, he was around our kids training.
Right.
So he said, no, I want to bring you guys on. And so he brought us on, and then we did that. And Coach Vigneault was there. So I was working with Elaine Vigneault when he was in Manitoba. And then when he went to Canucks, he kind of a couple years later, or the second year, I think, asked me if I wanted to go up. So I started with the Canucks as the assistant strength coach. And then it just built from there into more on ice stuff until at the end, there was just all on ice and video work.
Isn't that wild? What a crazy, crazy process. And what a crazy.
Yeah. Journey, eh? Yeah. And it, you know, it's like, I never necessarily set out to work in the NHL. And I think, like, you know, a strong message and something I learned back then was that it didn't matter where I was. I just wanted to be the best at do the best job I could. And it just led to something else. And then I was working with the Moose. I tried to do the best job I could and learn as much I can. And then just something else came along, and it just kept going from there. So I think that was a real strong message that I try and pass on to the kids, that, you know, whatever level you're playing at, be the best you can be at that level. And, you know, good things can happen. So that was a big part of my process and how I ended up working in the NHL. So,
yeah, good for you. I love that story. Yeah, I mean, and that is such a message that I work with the players that I'm talking about. I mean, especially the one, you know, like, you don't like where you are, or you didn't make AAA, or whatever 100%. The case may be. It's like, well, you got to dominate where you are first, right?
100%.
Like, take care of that. And if you take care of that, you're probably going to get taken care of. So don't, you know, and that was the same way playing in the minors, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, 100%. I wanted to be in the NHL, and it was like, well, dominate where you're at. I mean, kind of did maybe a couple times, and doesn't happen. But, you know, at least you got to take, that's what you got to take control of, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, that's, it's such a big thing between the American League and the NHL guys. Like, you know, and part of my job was to always go down and work with the farm team where it was. So I'd spend a week a month. And first it was in Manitoba, then Chicago, then it was Utica. But like, I would fly with the players that were getting sent down sometimes, or like, I remember driving with Zach Delpy from Buffalo to Utica. And so you kind of got to talk a lot with them, and the mindsets were different. Like, some guys were pissed off and complained about it. And, you know, they go down to the farm team and they don't have a great experience, but there's other guys who's like, well, okay, what do I need to work on? What do I have to do? And man, when they got down there, they busted their butts, and sure enough, you're back in the NHL. So, that mindset is really, really important. And you see it all at all levels of hockey. And it's like, you know, you have kids who like you said, didn't make that AAA team, well, be the best AA player that you can be, and there's a good chance you'll move back up. Mm-hmm. So I think, and it's a, like that development, it's such a long-term thing. And I think, you know, parents and kids right now forget that. It's like they want it now. They want to play U18 when they should be playing, you know, U16 or whatever. It's, yeah, it's, you know, dominate where you are, and good things will happen is what I think. So
when I had on there, one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, you know, the difference that you had seen in your career as far as player intangibles are concerned. I mean, and maybe I'll even say personal intangibles, because sometimes I think parents and players disconnect the two, right? Like, you know, your stick handling from your dedication or humbleness or curiosity, right? Like you talk about some guys that when they went down, they were upset. Some guys had the mindset they just wanted to get better. Can you speak to that at all? Like what you've seen through the years of like who does get better and what those intangibles might be?
Yeah, 100%. And to be honest, again, you're hitting the nail on the head. It's like those things are huge. Especially when you get to that level, like everyone's good. And I would, you know, people always ask, well, why can this guy get 100 points in the American League and, you know, it can't necessarily get it done in the NHL? And there's a lot of intangibles, a lot of it. I mean, there's the guys who come up and do drills, and, you know, if you're looking at a skill aspect, and then there's the guys who are doing it to learn and doing it to get better and like are thinking about what they're doing and why they're doing it. And I think, you know, I talk about Jonathan Toews a lot. Ever since he was 14 or 15, he would question why he was doing things, and not in a bad way. It was just, he wanted to understand it. He wanted to know why. And then, well, what if I tried this, you know? And, you know, I think, and then when I got to the NHL and then Bo Horvat came along, Bo was very similar. It was very much like, I don't want to just do a drill. I want to understand why I'm doing it and master it. And I talk a lot about skill development being game ready. I think, you know, especially with Instagram nowadays, you see this great skill drill or something or great move, or, and it's like, well, I want to go work on that. And I was like, well, okay, there's a lot of fundamentals that you're missing before you can start working on that. So I think one of the big things, to kind of make a long story short, is like understand what you're doing, to have that mindset of every time you're on the ice, like you can get better. It, you know, and you know, we talk about the ice time that these kids get, and you know, in the academy, is that if you aren't getting better, that's a large part on you. Because if you are, you know, listen, they have good coaches. If you're not following what they're doing and sticking with the details and following the habits, that those are intangibles. You know, it's like, be the best at the things that take no talent, and your talent will increase. So I'm not sure if I answered your question so much, but I think the mindset of being, it doesn't matter when you're on the ice, get something out of it. The mindset of you're going to be, your habits, your off ice habits. You know, if you ask any 16-year-old kid, well, who wants to play in the NHL? Everyone puts their hands up. Well, who's not going to go to that party on Friday or Saturday night? Oh, well, who's going to be up at 6 a.m. training, that, you know, after they played a tough game the night before? So those intangibles and that mental toughness, and, you know, I read the Angela Duckworth book on grit, and it's, grit is huge.
Yeah.
And so people often ask me, like, well, what's the one skill, or what's the one thing you need to have success in hockey or sport or life? And I think that's the big part of it. Oh. You know, it's so.
Two of my favorite books, Angela Duckworth for sure, Grit, and Carol Dweck, Mindset. I mean, for anyone out there, I think those are two must reads, and really, foundational pieces of like what I even do and why I even have a job, because those pieces are things that I think can be taught and is missing for a lot of people. And it's the piece, like it's that piece, right?
That is like I had a buddy who texted me because his kid was coming up, and he's like, so, like, what's the silver bullet, man? Like, and I was like, that's it. Like, because everybody's good as you get up, and you know, like, as you get to the higher levels, everyone's good. So it's like, what's going to separate you? And it's often your mindset. It's often what you do when things aren't going well. And,
yeah.
And you know what? It's hard, man. It's hard to make it to the NHL, and it's even harder to stay. Yeah. And you got to be all, there's injuries. How do you react with an injury? And, you know, there's so many variables. You get a coach who, you know, and that's another thing too. Like, you know, I worked with Newell Brown a lot, who's just to me one of the smartest guys in hockey. And we would do video sessions with a lot of players together and working on the ozone area or offensive side of the game. And something he always said to players was like, don't mistake criticism for coaching, you know, he's been doing it forever. And it just the mindset so different of how you have to approach the players and, you know, what you can show them and you better not show them that they're going to get upset. So, you know, it's having thick skin and it's grind. It's a grind, man. It's hard.
I hear you. Yeah. And I, like, so what you're saying there, I mean, I think there's two sides of that coin. Like one, and you must have seen it actually, and you know, that you've been at it over a decade now, mm-hmm. like how you need to talk to a player. The communication skills are vastly different, I Huge. Find. Yeah. How they're going to take information. And I think that's where that sports psychology and the understanding of the human is really, really important.
For sure.
One. And the other side is like, boy, if the player could be a little bit more approachable and not yep. so, you know, I don't know what the right word is, you know, I want to be careful with that, but you know, like yeah. that just opens the horizons for you a lot more. So 100%. I think, you know, you see it. So me as a coach, like, yeah, okay, I'm careful. How does this guy need? How do you deliver that message? Yep. How do you get the most out of him? So I'm always thinking that way. And the other side, I'm trying to build that guy up so he can just be more, have a greater bandwidth for communication. Right. Ugh.
Yeah, it's and that's yeah, you know, like, and for me coaching at the U15 level was challenging at times for me just with my expectations. And it's like, you know, you've worked with pros for so long and then you're there and it's like I had to keep reminding myself like they aren't pros, right? Like, you know, they're gonna make mistakes and that. And like so early in the year I found I was like, you know, yelling more or getting more upset, and it's like what am I doing? Like, you know, and that didn't mean I still had the expectations, and I didn't, you know, I wanted them to come up to the level of my expectations. And, but I think I had to change the approach on how I was delivering it. And, you know, instead of being, you know, angry about things, it was more like, okay, talk about the positives, show them what they're doing well. And it just, again, for me, I had to change my mindset there too. And, so it's been a good learning experience for me still, always continuing to learn. So.
Yeah. I think it's one of the greatest gifts of coaching, like it, and to do it well, I think you have to be evolving through the process, yeah. right? Like you're finding more about yourself, every day as a mind, right?
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's working, what isn't. I'm going to circle back though, just on when I asked you about, you know, the player intangibles and just sort of maybe put a little bow on it, because I think what you're talking about there, and one of the things that I love talking about with players is the concept of deliberate practice, which is kind of just a nice way to put what you're talking about, I think,
100%,
right? 100%. I talk all the time about, I mean, there's one thing to have an individual skill session, which is great. And if you can get out there with an individual guy and working on your own stuff and fantastic. But there's also like the team practice, which is the general scenario for most players everywhere, that the coach is trying to find a plan for 17 to 20 players on the ice. Yeah. Now, if you can individualize that practice for you and make it now about Johnny and the team, like every time you're out there, like you are gaining that developmental advantage, right? And but that's, 100%. I mean, that's a professional approach in its own sense, but it is a perspective difference that I think that a lot of guys just don't grab onto. Have you like, do you talk or try and teach that aspect of that? I know you speak to it, but is that something that you talk with your players when you're working them about?
All the time. And it's like, I think that's probably one of the things I get most frustrated with you see these kids who have the talent, but then they're coming out. And for me, I'm huge on fundamentals, like the edge work, your skating, your stride, but you have these kids who are, you know, they've had success in hockey. It's like, well, I don't need to work on this, or like, you know, I have this. So it's like an easy edge work drill. And it's like, they don't have their knees bent. They're kind of their body positions out of position. And it's that stuff to me is huge, because you have to master those fundamentals. And again, if you don't, at some point it's going to catch up to you. So for me, that's probably the most frustrating thing when you get those players out there that you know they can do it, but they just won't dial it in on those easy tasks. And yeah. And it's funny, you know, we're talking about it getting something on the ice every time. I used to work with Mike Keane when he played for the Manitoba Moose. And so he would train with us in the summers as well. And we had our summer skates, but he was also going out with his buddies and playing like beer league hockey in the summer. I was like, Keener, what are you doing going out and skating with those guys? And he's like, well, every time I go out there, I work on one thing for me. And I was like, ah. I was like, okay. And this was, you know, after he'd won his 3 Stanley Cups and, you know, again, wasn't the most skilled player in the NHL, but he was a really good NHL player. Yeah. But that was his mindset. Every time I'm on the ice, I'm going to work, and I'm going to work on something specific. And then our summer skates, like I remember it would be July 1st, and he was the hardest worker out there. He was in puck battles. He was, you know, and the other guys like Kate Keener, like, you know, easy, it's July 1st. And he was like, man, I'm here to get better. And he didn't care. Yeah. And I love that mentality.
So, unapolegetic about his standard.
100%.
Yeah.
Every time.
That's such a great message. I love that you talked that. And another thing, I just, what a great conversation. Because that's totally one of the things that I'm talking about. I don't care if it's a junior kid or whatever. Like, whatever standard you're at right now, it's really not good enough, right? So, like, to understand where you're at and where you want to get to and where that needs to elevate, then there's, like, your own personal barometer and you're guiding your own ship, right? Like, there should be that internal challenge. And when you hear about somebody like that, it takes balls, to be quite honest, to do that, right? Like what Mike Keane does. You're not worried about what your peer group thinks. You're not worried about how you're judged. You are very, very authentically, like, understanding your own goals and what it takes for you to get there. And that takes 100%. A lot of maturity, for sure.
Yeah, and again, that's John and Tave, same way, right? Like, it didn't matter what we'd be in the pool and doing races, and he wouldn't win a swimming race, and he was pissed. Like, he did not want to lose. And same thing, guys like, oh, take it easy. But he's like, no, like, I'm here. I'm going to get better. And, you know, someone now who has that, and I see it, is T. Jagielka with the Rockets. Man, he is dialed in. And I love working with having the opportunity to work with a guy like him. And again, same thing. There's one speed, and it's 100% on every single drill we do with the Rockets. And, you know, I was like, it's so evident where this guy is going to go and what he's going to do. And it's like, if I'm a teammate, man, I'm jumping on that, and I'm doing exactly what he does. So he's another one that has that mentality where it's like, I'm here to get better, guy. You do you, but this is how, what I'm doing. So I love that. Yep.
Yeah. Perfect. the fundamentals. Oh my goodness. Like, I'm so glad you said that. Because not only do they, and I don't care how old the kid is, right? Like, generally, like, the younger guys, I'm not even going to generalize, but they're not as good as they think they are at it.
No, man.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, they think they got it. And like, no, you're not even close. Like, you know, like, and if you don't get that outside edge, like, perfect. Yes, it is going to catch up with you, you know? And it's like, I love doing the, like, and, geez, I'm all over the map in my head right now, but like the idea of that, like the simplification of the stride, of the edges, doing that with intention is like, that's, to me, that's like the golden bullet. And I think everyone's trying 100%. To like add in more pylons and do this and do that, and they think it's fancy, and it's like, I don't know, call it boring, but it's like, what you need is reps and this stuff. And I don't care if you're 25 and in the show, they're still doing
NHL that. NHL guys are still doing it, man. Yeah. The best NHL players are doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's so important. And that's an interesting point, like even as a skills coach. And, you know, there's so much competition, and you're trying to make a living. It's like, sometimes I struggle with, like, man, this isn't very fun, but I know it's the right stuff. And I know it's what the kids need, you know, and so I try and work in smaller groups and really focus on that. And, you know, I just think it's so important. And again, when you have the kids who will, and that's a mindset in itself, who, when it's not the most fun, but will be dialed in, and they are doing it with, you know, like even a lot of it is setting your posture, right? So, you know, you're in a turn, where are your shoulders? Where's your head? Well, let's work on it, master it, master it. And then we add game-like drills where, okay, I'm on a rush and I want to do a delay and I want to have my head turned to the middle of the ice, you know, like it's just there. It's just there. And the other thing, like you think of, you know, you see all the highlight reel, you know, deets or whatever in the NHL. And a lot of that is skating. A lot of it, you know, it's not so much the hands. Yes, there's guys who, but a lot of it is their ability to use their edges and to change direction and have deception with their feet. And so once you've mastered the fundamentals, then that other stuff was just creativity.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
You know, and being able to have your head up and see what's there, because you could practice a through the legs drill all you want, but the right scenario has to be there for it to be successful.
Yeah.
Or you have to set, you manipulate, you know, the defenders to set that up. So that isn't just coming. Like that's players' creativity because their fundamentals are so good.
Yeah. And from the aspect of like, I'm just thinking like some of the stuff that I run, and I mean, connecting the edges to the hands, right? And I'm doing this, right? So you're on your inside edge and you're bringing the puck across. Other inside edge, bring the puck, or you disconnect your hands from your feet and you're doing the actually opposite, right? Like
that's right.
We get these patterns locked in, right? Like people skate a certain way and they do things a certain way. And when you can unlock those and create some new patterns, now in a 360 dynamic game, you can do whatever needs to be done. Instead of going A to B through this pylon, do this. Like to me, like you need to do a little bit of that, but like I love like just the fundamentals, structure that in, and then they can be creative in how the game is played. And I think that's a big difference maker.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like Elias Pettersson is one where you talk about a guy who disassociates his hands and his feet. And that guy is so deceptive because it's like people would say, he's not a great skater, whatnot, but he's very deceptive with his skating. It's hard. Like a lot of guys, you know, their stick count skate, it's a rhythm. So you're defending it, you can find that rhythm. And it's easy. But with him, it's like you can't figure out what he's necessarily doing. And I think that's one of the things that makes him really, really deceptive. And, you know, the way he comes across the ice and he's sculling on his edges, and, you know, he adds a little delay there, and then he on his, you know, just scraping his edges a little bit, just buys him a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And so those little things, it's like, man, it's not so much his hands, it's the ability to do that with his feet while watching what's playing and to delay, and then that just creates time and space for him.
Yeah. And it's not a pattern. Like it's like,
right.
I don't think we even consciously understand that in a game or a defender, but like there is a rhythm to a crossover and there is a sequence to how you stick handle. And like, and you can anticipate that when that gets thrown off somehow, now you've bought yourself that microsecond. Right.
Yep.
And that's like, I like to geek out on this stuff sometimes, and I think it's super interesting, you know, in the development aspect that we're both in now, we're kind of in the same age bracket right now when it comes to that stuff. And there's so much there that's really juicy and kind of exciting. I remember personally, like, why this is relevant. I was bigger, faster, right? So I could kind of, when I was younger, so I could drive wide. If I could continue going, then I would and just go wide. And if the guy would turn, then I would come back in on my forehand. Right. And like, that was like my move because it worked.
Yep.
The funny thing was though, that got so patterned in for me. Like once I got to, I think it was maybe probably BCHL when I first got to BCHL as a 15-year-old, like, that was not all I needed. I needed 100%. To be able to cut back on the other side. And it was like, so I had to learn that on the fly. And I just remember like, and that was sort of my first personal understanding of like the pattern that I had developed personally, you know? And it was hard to unlock that when it was like so rote, memorized, not even understanding. So that's sort of an idea of like why both ways and like turn both ways, and players don't even understand that they turn better right than left, and they always turn right in a game.
That's what makes the development side so fun, and that the creativity of throwing stuff in there. And often, you know, like I'll do a simple drill and it's just about that. It's about going both ways and having your hands in a position where you can make a play, or having your head turned in a position where you can make a play. And yeah, I'll have often coaches in the stands and like, well, like, what were you like? That looked like a pretty easy drill. And it's like, well, yeah, do you know what we were working on? They're like, well, it was then. I was like, no, not even close. And we were working on head position when our puck's here. We were working on head position with our feet going this way, rotating our shoulders so we were facing the net, right? Like, just different things like that. And it's very subtle. And again, it takes kids that are special and want to work on that stuff to actually get it,
yeah,
and to understand it. And I think that's, it's so important to add different variables like that into your game.
It's going to take a short break from the podcast to share with you how exciting the UMH68 has been this year for me. I've been traveling all over British Columbia watching the 2011 age group as well as the 2010 age group, watching provincial championships, watching regional camps, watching different tournaments, and trying to identify who the top players in the province are, and also getting their contact information. That sometimes is the biggest problem, and then getting the invitations out to announce that they have been selected as a real special group within the province to come together with me and a ton of other professionals for 4 days in June. This concept was proven last year in a 30-day window with the 2009 age group, a super successful event where we brought in three teams of the top players in the province for a hockey experience that none of them had quite had before. And this year it is growing to two age groups, and really excited with the programming that we have, the people we have coming in, with the messaging, the level of competition that we are going to have, who we have on the benches for coaches, the sponsors that are ready to make this an amazing experience for not only the players, but also the families as well. So lots of fun. We are building up the groups for sure. We have lots of official registrations in. We have the photos of the players in that I'm going to be releasing soon on social media as we reach some higher thresholds and announce some of these players. And yeah, it's super exciting. So if you want to find out more about what the UMH68 is, especially if you live in British Columbia, by all means, check out the website uphockey.com. If you feel that you are in the 2010 age bracket, I'm sorry, the 2011 age bracket, and you have not received an invitation yet, and you feel you are in the top players of BC conversation, top 68 to top 100 players in BC, then by all means, put yourself on the watch list, add your reference in there, who your coach is, and we will do some digging. And if there's a room available, you may have earned yourself an invite just by being proactive and taking care of your own business, which is definitely something that I teach and I mentor with the athletes that I work with, is like taking care of your own journey. Take ownership. Don't wait for it to happen. If this is something that you feel that you deserve and you've worked hard enough to gain an invite, then by all means, beat your drum and get on the website and fill out the form and say, hey, Coach Jason, I think you missed somebody important. I love that about people being proactive in their own development. So yeah, the UMH68, super exciting. Lots of work from EMI and from an administration standpoint, but it's so worth it once the product is in, and once these athletes show up in Vernon and get to experience something that is going to stay with them for a long, long, long time. If you happen to be somebody that received an invitation and you are potentially trying to make a decision, I know there is lots of options in the spring market. I promise you, if you listen to me at all, I'm a straightforward kind of guy. I'm black and white. This is not like anything else out there. I think this is something that you clear your plate for, that you move stuff around to attend, and you are not going to regret the experience at all. You're going to be thankful and grateful that you decided to make that decision. It's not just another spring tournament by any stretch of the imagination. It is building and growing the province's best players. That's the idea behind it, to get to know your peer group while learning and building not only your hockey game, but also your personal development game. And you will leave with a big smile on your face and be happy that you came. Also at a price that I believe is unrivaled in the marketplace for what you are getting from a programming standpoint. So yes, this is a franchise UMH68 that is growing. growing for sure. Like I said previously, we will be planning to expand into Alberta next year, Saskatchewan, and maybe Manitoba at some point. I believe this to be a Western Canadian franchise for sure, and really allow these players the opportunity to come together and experience hockey the way it should be played at that at the high level that they're at. So I will leave that with you. Once again, upmyhockey.com for the UMH68 showcase if you're curious and want to be involved. Also, if you happen to live in Alberta, Saskatchewan, or Manitoba, and if you are a hockey person that has a network, I am looking to expand with like-minded people that want to be a part of this thing. I obviously have a pretty wide and vast network with a lot of guys there, but you know, there is connections to arenas that we need. We do need to be in markets that that there is some influence being able to be had. So if this is something that you are excited about, that you think it would be a good fit in either your region or in your province, by all means reach out on the website and I'd love to have a conversation about it. Now let's get back to the discussion with Mr. Glenn Carnegie.
Can you speak to that whole, like you touched on it briefly, but like the race to be the most confusing, let's even say, or like having the most props? Like, I think like as a common hockey parent or mom or dad, and you're out there and, you know, they're paying money and they're investing in these things. It can be like a circus, right? Because you want to do the next thing and you want to do the next thing, when really the best thing for the kid is to get as many reps at the one thing that they want to try and work on, right? Like, which maybe doesn't show well, you know? Like, 100%. How do you fight that and how do you balance that? And what's the message to parents out there?
Yeah, well, it's something you do all the time, right? Like, my whole thing is to stick to what I believe in. And you know, maybe that's not for everybody, and that's okay, but I think this is the way I believe in development, and that's not to say I don't add props or things at times, because I do, but I'm always very careful as to doing that and then taking them away and having them do the same situation in a game like scenario. So yeah, I think for everyone it's finding the correct balance for you and just understanding how you believe in development and sticking with it. And it's like, you know, if a parent came and asked me why I'm doing that or why I'm not doing this, I'll have a clear answer as to why. And if that doesn't work for them, I'm fine with that, right? And it's like, and that's the one thing with development. It's like, there's no one way, right? There's so many different ideas out there, great ideas. And for me personally, I'm always looking at different ideas, and I may see something and I was like, I like that part of it, but not that part. So then I'll incorporate it into my way, right? And I don't have a definition for my way by any means, but I think for me, it's, I want them to, you know, learn a skill and practice it. So if it's just a simple turn, for example, then I want to apply it. So maybe with some props or something, apply it. And then I take all that stuff away. And now it's game-like application, you know? So it's kind of like that. You learn it. Then it's you teach it, let them do it, reps. And then you apply it in that game-like fashion. And then I've found pretty well that they really pick up the skills. And the other thing with hockey, and it's, there's so many different variables. Like, the players are in different positions, and so there's not like, it's not like a pitch and a hit, right? Like, there's so many different variables. When you enter the zone, is your guy middle lane driving? Is your guy wait, like, so, and that's the, you have to have the ability to make those reads. And I think that's something, when you just add all the props and all that, you lose a lot of that reading ability. And there's lots of, you know, you hear scouts and that say, well, he's a great drill guy, like in a drill, man, he's a first rounder. And then you put him in a live practice or a game, it's like, oh, okay, there's why he's not a first rounder.
One of the things that when I'm actually behind a bench, and I am in the spring because I run my own spring programs, but the thing that I'm that I talk about the players with, and I also try and incorporate it into the practices. And it's like, and again, it's a stupid, simple fundamental, but it's like being able to control the puck with your head up.
100%.
Yeah. Right? Like that, like, I'm not saying it gets forgotten, but like that, without that element, you can take in no information and you can't make good decisions. Right? So like, you have to be able to establish that. And then when I'm behind the bench, it's like, what did you see? Right. Yep. And what was your read to make the decision that you made? So instead of like, I don't know, for me, it's like, I'm not teaching a 2-1-2, let's say, or a 1-2-2, and you have to stand here. Like, I want them to understand the concepts and the dynamics of the game, and they're picking up the information because it's such a dynamic sport. And then they are responding to that information. So like, without the head up, you can't see it. And without the idea of like teaching concepts, I think they don't get it either. Like, is that something that you, like, you just said it essentially, like, there's some guys that are great in practice, but they can't compute, or they can't see, or whatever this thing is. Like, how do you go about coaching that? Like the hockey IQ, I guess, side of the game.
Yeah. And that's always a debate whether you can improve it in that. And I believe you can. So I work with a lot of guys on video as well, where I'll do game analysis. And like, you're right, there's some really skilled guys who it's like, so when you see in video or you go through video with them, it's like, what do you, like, I'll stop. Like, what do you see here? And they can say, oh, I had this option, that option, that. Yeah, you did. Okay. Next one. It's like, what did you see here? Oh yeah. Well, I didn't see that on the ice. But now, yeah, I had this. So like, they get it, but it's like in that time, in that moment, they aren't seeing it. And so for me, I've taken guys and it's simple. It's like, you know, you're a really good hockey player, but you don't play with your head up, you know, or it's even, let's say they're doing a delay on the rush. And, you know, as soon as you're making your turn, for me, I want to be looking to the middle of the ice. But you're not, your shoulder and your head and your chin is in line. So as you're turning, I'm looking at boards. Now I see, you know, if it's the D man's there thinking low to high, I'm not even seeing my options in the scoring area.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. So you go low to high, fine. It's not a terrible play, whatever, but here's what you're missing. Yeah. And it's like, you want to create offense? Well, it's often as simple as working on your skating with your head in the right spot. And again, like, it's so fast, like that hole or a seam is there for a second. If you don't take it, it's gone. And then, yeah, you make a safe play, or you'll cycle it back into the corner, which again is, you know, sometimes it's good play, but I want to challenge guys to create more offense, to keep more possession of pucks. You know, and on a rush, like, you know, yes, you dumped it in, it's fine, but you dumped it in a spot where they broke out and now you're back checking. So even simple things like that, of a soft chip to your strong side corner, that's a good skill to have.
Yeah,
that's a skill, right? And then getting in there, and then now you're engaged in your puck battle skills, your stick on puck. So all that stuff is so simple, but it just takes reps and reps and reps. And again, I think through video, it's a lot of video. And, you know, I try, and again, you're careful. It's you don't want to show too much negative. So you know, you got to back it up with positive. But I think it's important to see us make mistakes. I think it's important to we all make them. In the NHL, guys make mistakes. It's kind of, you got to, you know, you learn from it. And the kids who are willing to go through it and watch, sometimes it's 20 minutes of me showing, like, okay, here's what were your options. You're not seeing it. So sometimes you have to hammer home that point and then rebuild them up and say, okay, well, here's now all things you did really, really well. And that's, you know, again, I don't want to not work on things they do well. It has to be a balance. So, and it's not always, okay, well, you're not very good at this, so we need to work at this.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they're playing like this, like that, just get back to the idea of like being able to have a puck on your stick and have your head up. Like, that is so freaking critical, because you're not going to see that chip, or maybe you only see the chip because that's all you see is like that middle lane drive and you think your lanes are cut off. That's whereas, right. Like, and you've seen it this year, like, it, it's even like I watch junior hockey. It's crazy. Like the next layer of offense, which is very, very often the best layer of offense, is behind
100%.
You.
Yeah.
Right.
It's funny you say that. I often do like a 2-versus-2 continuous drill. It's common drill. It's like the 1-on-1 down, and then that forward on the other corner leaves the defense and he joins. Right.
Yeah.
So sometimes like the back checker might've fallen or is a corner. And it's a clear 1-on-2, but the guy with the puck, he goes and attacks that defender 1-on-1.
Yeah.
And it's like through the triangle. I'm like, guys, how do you not see this? Like you shoulder check. Okay. My guy's coming. It's a 2-on-1. Maybe pull up a little bit, delay a little bit, wait for him and create 2-on-1s. And again, it's a skill, and that's an IQ, and it's just, you got to keep showing them and showing them and showing them. I think, the guys on the U15 team, that was something I tried to incorporate with them. It's like, you guys, you got to see the ice. You got to take your time a little bit. Like, you don't have to go, 100 miles an hour constantly. It's changing speeds. Delay a little bit. Work on, and that's Pettersson, a great example. He's so good at little delays with his skating where he just turns his foot, scrapes the ice while he's still stick handling, and it's actually delaying him. So that D's creating more, gets going back at the same speed, and he creates space that way. So those are the skills that I get fired up about too, because it's just, there's little things and everybody can do it.
Yeah. And you have to be so darn repetitive. I think that's the hard part. And like the consistency, as far as what we do as coaches, because if you do move on or past it and they haven't got it, like we've missed the boat, right? And trying to bring that loop, like that teaching feedback loop into, this is why we're now doing this drill in practice. Cause remember the 3-on-2 where we had the third guy high and nobody saw him? Like, we need to be able to have our inside edge with their head up and cut, right? Like, and it's, some days I'm better at it than others, and you kind of forget. Yeah. It's like keeping reminding them about what the process is, right? So this is now executable in the game. But
it's really hard as a coach too. And like as the season goes, and it's like they're often so reactive to the past game instead of like, well, no, here's my plan and I'm sticking to it. It's my development plan and I'm going to stick with it. And like for me, I didn't spend a lot of time on systems in that. It was more like Monday's power skating, Tuesday was skills, Wednesday was puck battles and game like skills, Thursday we do a little bit of power play or like system stuff just to going over a forecheck, but and then it's games. So for me, and it's, and then let's say there's things that weekend and then we practice Tuesday, it's like, oh man, we got to work on this. It's like, nope, we're sticking with this plan and this is how we're doing it. And working with an NHL coach who probably instilled that was Alain Vigneault. He was very much, we are sticking with our plan. We set the plan. Everyone knew it, start of the year. And he didn't sway from it too much, even though people are saying, oh, you got to work on this, you got to work on this. He was very much, no, let's stick on our plan. And we want to be, in 2011, we went to the Cup Finals. Like, this is where we want to be then.
Yeah.
So it's that whole year of developing, and all the players bought in, and it was a super, super fun year. I think that's so important to set, and it's hard work to set that plan, but once it's done, you almost don't have to worry about it later. So it's like every time practice came around, I already knew what we were, maybe not the exact drills, but I knew the template of practice already. I knew. So your work's done.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely repeatable, right? And you tweak as you go and everything else. But
it's top heavy, but once you've had that plan, like you've been on the ice, I have pretty much a lot of new players. So once you kind of see what you have, it's like, okay, well, and for me, skating's always the the king thing that we gotta work on all the way up. So
Yeah, and that's the thing, it's so funny too, because I am 100% with you, like, especially in today's game. I mean, if you can't skate, you can't play. I tell my guys that all the time. Like, you have to be a plus skater, you mean, to play at any type of top level. because then you're relevant. Like, you're still relevant. You can still impact the game, right? You not have great hands, and you can maybe even not see the ice great, but if you can get to a puck, or if you can get in on a back check, like, you're relevant, right? So
100%.
So yeah, I'm all about it, but it's also funny. Like, I have, mind you, I haven't done a good job of marketing it, and I'm blessed that a lot of my stuff up here just fills up on its own. Yeah, but I did this Breakfast Club skate thing this year, Wednesday morning Breakfast Club, and announcing, there's like, we're not doing any pucks. It's an hour for six sessions. And it's like my least attended, like, booked thing. And it's actually the best thing that I probably do.
100%. Yeah. I guarantee it is. And that's, you know, that's the other thing. It's like, we've been talking about, it's like, not as many kids want to do that.
Yeah.
But for me, it's so important. And again, to work with small groups in that environment, man, they're going to get better. And it's like, those are the kids you're going to see that develop. It's those ones who are willing to do that and understand it and work at it. And then, you know, it's, you put them in other things and they just already have that mindset, and everything develops a lot faster that way. So
I know.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, we've talked about it. It's hard as a skills developer, power skating guy. And, you know, you have parents in the stands and it's like, oh man, I'm doing a lot of teaching here and it's not all that exciting. And, oh, by the way, I don't have pucks out there. You know, it's the best stuff, man.
Yeah. I 100% agree. And if, yeah, I mean, and that's where the buy-in goes. Like, when I'm working with the players, is like, if you can get like curious about it, you know, like how, like, be super competitive internally about like trying to master it, you know, like trying to like bear down for that period of time that you're out there. Like, that is when you just see kids skyrocket and it continues on. When you're talking about, I'm going to talk about just Jonathan Toews for a second, because I think you've talked about him a few times, and I had Dane Jackson on, who coached him at the university level. And we talked a little bit intangibles, and he said he was the first kid at like 19 years old that showed up at our program that like spoke openly about his day starting the night before when he would go to bed so he could get up on time to make the most of his day. Like, he said, like, this guy had like captain written all over him, like from the start. But in my mind, those are like, if that's not your natural habit, like, this is something that you can learn from example, from seeing, you know, like, these are things that you can apply to yourself. So maybe just talk a little bit more about Jonathan Toews. I think he probably deserves a little more airtime.
And I think it's hard to, like, people know this stuff, but to actually do it is hard, and to make the sacrifice that he did. Like, at when we started with him at 14, he was a pro already. Like, you know, a lot of the kids, so we trained 5 days a week in the summer. And and it was long. It was 2 hour days. And he was always on time, always like, and on time meant like when workout started, he had his shoes on, his water was full. It wasn't like, well, I'm here, but I still haven't tied my shoes. I still got to get my water. Like, that just a little thing right there.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, we had the same training time every day. He didn't plan dentist appointments or doctor appointments during his workout time. And again, that's something that stuck out to me when I was starting out. Like, I learned so much from him coming up in my career, having him as a, you know, an athlete that we worked with, because his habits were always so good. And it came into, you know, through his university career. And also just, I always talk about him having a relentless pursuit of excellence. So even today, you know, he's still working on things to better himself. Even, you know, after he won his first Stanley Cup, it's like, okay, Glennie, like, this summer, we're going to do X, Y, Z. This is what I want to focus on. He would send me an Excel sheet that had his days, you know, and it was like, yep, good, we got it. And then I think maybe after maybe it was a Sec Cup, and then, or it was around two, it might have been around the first, but he started wanting to explore with some different training methods, you know. And the other thing is, like, we had an open communication about it. So he wanted to do some things he had saw somewhere else. And, you know, he came to me about it, and I'm like, okay, this now is probably, you know, my top client or whatever. And, you know, as a strength coach or skills guy, it's like, my mindset was like, well, I want to learn as much about it and help him do that. I wanted the best for him. And if he felt that's what he needed to do. So I went to Minnesota with him to where this trainer was. And, you know, he's like, okay, I want to do some of these workouts back in Winnipeg. And I was like, great. So, you know, I learned from that strength guy too. And I was open to it. I wasn't like, oh no, it's like my way is the only way, or, you know, you have to train this way. He's a professional athlete and he knew what he felt he needed. He didn't. And that's the other thing about a lot of these guys is they don't want to do what everyone else is doing. They want new ideas. They want to do something that only they're doing. So we came back and now John's doing these different things in the gym. And the guy's like, well, what's he doing? Why is he doing that? Well, so he's always that leader, man. And like he texts me. It's like, well, have you seen this? Have you seen this? What do you think of this? And I think, again, for me, like, I was like, oh, man, I don't want to lose him as a client, but I also just wanted what was best for him.
Yeah.
And it was, and I think that helped our relationship continue and grow. And, you know, I worked with him through his NHL time out in Lake of the Woods at his cabin. We had a nice, there's a nice in just outside Kenora where I had a bunch of NHL guys. And so we would, you know, guys would boat to the rink and then it was to one of their cabins and they had gyms in the cabin. It was awesome. But he was always the leader as to this is what I'm doing, guys. You can do what you're doing, but this is what I'm doing. If you want to do it, yeah, you can do it with me, but I'm not like, so I guess just a relentless pursuit of excellence always and never satisfied. I mean, it's the 2 days after his cup party and it's like, okay, when are we starting? Yeah. And it's like,
that's a mindset. You
know, it's 100%. And it's a choice.
Yes.
And it's just hard to make that choice. And everyone knows, you know, the right things to do, but can you do it? Can you, again, like I said, you know, and I remember, I guess when he was named captain of the Blackhawks. So he came back and he's like, man, like he was 19 or whatever it was. And he's like, what do I know? And I was like, well, John, they chose you for a reason. It's like, don't change anything. Just be who you are. And, you know, and then we talked about what leaders he respected in the NHL. And I was like, well, do you have access to their numbers? It's the, yeah. I was like, call them. And the thing that amazed me is like, he went home and called them. It's like, that's a choice where other guys like, will take that, but don't do it. They don't, well, I'm not going to call them. You know, I don't want to like be that guy. He does it. If it's going to make him better, he does it. And that's something I've always respected and admired about him and learned so much from him about that stuff. So I think that kind of would sum up him and the way he is. And yeah, it was just an awesome person.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, the mindset of getting of improvement. There's an internal competition. I think that drives guys. I think there's a curiosity level. If I have to use kind of my language, I think that guys that are interested in their best, like, and whatever that looks like, they're really curious about what's out there and how it applies to them, right? And, and what else they can be doing. The other thing that I heard from your story from him that I think aligns with what I talk about is the idea of team and like your circle. You know, that you are not ever good enough not to get help from somebody, right?
Like,
definitely don't trust every Tom, Dick, and Harry, but be diligent with who it is and what they align with and their philosophy. And, you know, all those things are important, but the best in the world have guys around them.
Oh, yeah.
Without question, you know, without question. And, and you know, I mean, even from that side, I mean, Nathan MacKinnon has been super open about the idea that when he broke through, the difference was that he actually had somebody work on his head with him.
Yeah.
I mean, he had every physical tool man could speak of, but he wasn't producing at the rate he wanted to. And he got some help with that, right? Like what a humbling thing to have to say, right?
Yep.
And look at him now, right? Like off to the races, you know? So I'm repeating that just for the messaging out there, right? I mean, these are things that are choices for people.
It's choices. And again, they're hard choices because usually it comes with some kind of sacrifice. And like I said, everyone says they want to do this and have the success, but are you willing to actually do everything it takes?
Yeah.
And you know, and that's hard to do, and year after year, day after day, it makes it even harder. But
how do you feel about this? I'm gonna sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no worries.
I just in my head, because it's such a arms race right now sometimes with parents about, you know, the program or how much ice or where, and I can you know, and they're punching every ticket to everything. Now my son, and I need to preface this, because he did play CSSHL Academy last year, which they're on the ice all the time, which is the first year where I've kind of like allowed that to happen. And I'm just gonna, and I know you coach in a program that has a lot of availability of ice time and stuff too, but I just want to take it back, like the 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 year old. Like I was the guy that like didn't have my guys and everything.
Right.
Because I wanted them to have some ownership and accountability and interest in their own development, right? That they weren't waiting for me to drive them somewhere, but they would choose to go and shoot pucks, or they would choose to try and find some other way to make themselves better. Like I thought that, just again, me and my philosophy, like that internal side of it, which is kind of hard to teach, is really important as far as the longevity of like whether it's being a hockey player or just being a good human. How do you feel about that? Because I think there's a lot of kids that are just dragged around everywhere, and then when it comes time for them to be a pro, they have no idea how to do it because they've just been told what to do forever.
Yeah, I think that is a huge thing right now, and I think you're exactly right. It's, you know, first of all, do they want to do it, and are you dragging them to all these things? If you're dragging them to all these things, I think you're wasting your time.
Right.
Because like we said, if they don't love it, at some point it gets too hard. Like it just, whether it's junior or whatever, it's just, it's too much. And if you didn't love to do it, I think you just fall off the wayside. But yeah, if you know, it's a conversation that could go either way, but it's like, you know, you even talk about multi-sport now. It's like, well, how, should they be doing all these other things? And yes, I think they do, but the environment we live in right now is the more ice time you're out there, typically those are the kids that are going further in hockey. And whether it's right or wrong, I don't know, but if the kid wants to do it and is asking to do it and is excited to go, I think it's great. And you know, I grew up in Winnipeg where we had access to outdoor ice, so it was a lot less structured, but I mean, we lived at the rink and we were on the ice, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day pretty well. So, and out here, it's, everything's a little bit more structured, which I don't love. I think kids should just be able to play more. But for me, it's, like it's about whether they want to do it. And if they do, and you have the means to do it, and again, it, you're not taken away from family time, because I think that's important that they're kids too. I think it's, I think, if they're excited to do it, and I know parents here and that drive their kids, they're playing in the, you know, HPL or HSL, and, you know, they're driving their kids to Vancouver every weekend, and they're, then they're, you know, half the teams in Merritt, half the teams somewhere else. So they're driving to practice. And if the, if they love it and the kids love it and, you know, have at it.
No judgment for me. I mean, that's
right.
All good.
Yeah,
at all. I just found like even like working with these I don't know, privileged, entitled kids, you know, that have had kind of that environment. Like when they get out in these, like you would think like a U18 prep team, you know, where you're paying $30,000 as a parent, like these guys would be dialed in. I would think. I mean, that was just my perspective. Yet I have clients that are on the there's guys vaping at the back of the bus. There's guys you know what I mean? Like just crazy stuff that you would think like would not be happening, or something as simple as like an NHL scout coming to talk to a team on Zoom. This is my favorite U18. I won't talk about the program or whatever, but it was like a sign up. Two kids from this U18 signed up to listen to this guy talk about what they look for to be an NHL player. At a CSSHL Academy. I'm like, that's a massive disconnect from where you need to be.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
100%. Like a massive disconnect.
Yeah. And it's that mindset, right? And everyone says they want to play in the NHL, or they want to go to college to play hockey or whatever it is, but they aren't willing to do every little thing it takes. And you know, those I don't have an answer. I don't get it. For me, it's like any opportunity you have, you're there and you make the most of it. And especially when you're in those academies, when, you know, your parents are, you know, some families are remortgaging homes to do this. And it's like, if I'm a kid doing that, man, like, it's such a privilege. And sometimes I have found you got to remind them of how lucky they are to be able to do what they're doing every day. And, you know, to not even the hockey, they're training every day and learning, and the nutrition stuff they learn and the habits that, like, really, it's an environment that if you set a goal and really work your butt off to do it, you can accomplish anything. Whether it's, and like you said, whether it's about playing hockey somewhere, or just coming out of there and being a good person and learning, this is what it takes to have success in life. Is there's value in that, but if it's a lot of money to waste if you're not dialed into doing that stuff. Yeah,
I love you touching on that. Gratitude's a big piece of what I train with the players. I mean, I think that not only does it make you, like, does you make your attitude better, make you a better teammate, it makes you all these other things, but it also makes you take advantage of what's in front of you, right? Like, it's such a, that's another skill, I think, that is, when you talk about it enough, it's super beneficial, you know, to train gratitude. Oh, yeah. As crazy as that sounds for some people, but I think you actually can train it a little bit. Yeah. So I just had the one thing I wanted to ask you, and it's more of a personal one. And when I got into, like, doing the podcast, this maybe we can relate, maybe we can't. It was like, who the hell would want to listen to me? You know, like, whatever, right? You have this kind of complex, let's say, imposter syndrome almost. And I don't mean to project this on you, but going to, like, an NHL environment and, like, in working with these guys, right, that are the best in the world, and, you know, everyone has their process and their journey, like, how did you, or did you have any issue of, like, holy shit, like, I'm on the ice with these guys, like, or what can I teach, you know, whoever? Well, you know,
100%, man. It's like, well, the first thing is, I never played in the NHL, right? And, you know, played low level pro in Germany. So, but I think that's where I came back to what I believe in, is like, I'm just going to present what I believe and, you know, relate it to the players. And I get, like, for example, the first time I went on the ice with the Sedin Twins, I was like, okay, what am I going to teach these guys? Like, honestly. that wasn't my focus of how I ended up working, but, it was very much so communicate with them, talk, and they're great guys, super open guys, and were always willing to talk about hockey. So it was like, okay, I sat down with them. I was like, what would you guys want to work on? Kind of, what do you guys see? And then I'd kind of build a bit of a program and say, okay, well, here's what I'm thinking when we're on the ice, we'll work on this. So I gave them kind of their input into it and showed them that what I was thinking and why. So they knew when we were going on the ice, what we were focused on and working on. And if you can make these guys feel like what you're doing is going to benefit them, they're all in, man. They'll go on the ice. So that was the first time with the Twins. And then a guy like Ryan Kessler and, you know, and BX and those guys, it was just more of that, a lot of communication and explaining what I saw, what I thought, taking their feedback. And it's like, okay, show them video, and it's like, here's what I think we need to work on, here's how I'm going to do it, let's go do those drills. And so they knew the drills. It wasn't just random, let's go out and, like, stick handle around stuff. It was like very focused on their game and individual. And that, as you know, like, you get to that level, you don't get that individual stuff, right? Like, it's a team practice typically. And, you know, I give props to Mike Gillis, who was the GM when I got there, and Alain Vigneault. It was very much, okay, well, we have goalie coaches working with them every day individually, why don't we have someone working on our players, on their skills individually, and to score goals individually? And that was kind of their mindset. And I remember when I got there in September for my first full season with the Canucks, and I was like, okay, we had a meeting with Vigneault. I was like, okay, so how do you want me to set this up? He's like, I don't know, you're the skills coach, you do it. If you're screwing up, that wasn't the word he used, I'll let you know. And I was like, okay. So I really had to, like, think of a process. Cause like you said, I did feel that way. I was like, what do I have to teach them? But when I could take their feedback, explain to them what I'm thinking, show them why, and then come up with drills that are really relevant for them, they were all in. Right. And that, I think, you know, is again, there was times when I'd question, I was like, just all I can do is the best that I can do. And if it's not going to work or those guys don't like it, then it's not the end of the world, right? Like, there's just, I'll move on. But
yeah.
So I think that was one of the biggest challenges is to, you know, and I remember even like after the summers of all the guys I had, they'd come back from their NHL teams. It's like early on, I was like, oh man, like I got to come up with the best drills and the best things. And it was like, I learned real quick. No, you don't. Just have a reason for what you're doing. And, you know, it's, I remember all like Scott Arneal, he was the head coach of the Moose too. And I was going back and he, I remember him saying to me, it's like, Glennie, like anyone can run a drill. You have to actually teach the skill if you want to set yourself up as a skills coach. And that always resonated with me. Like, I can't just run a drill, right? You have to, there has to be teaching to it. There has to be a purpose to it. And the expertise I have is that ability to pick three things that I want to see in a drill and then hammer that home. It's like, if that's not there, we're stopping the drill and we're doing it till you get it. There might be other things that are missing, but we're going to worry about that later.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was so lucky to work with such great people that I kind of soaked it in and just kind of built my way. And again, it's like, you know, I think myself out doing podcasts, and it's funny you say that, because I'm like, man, who's going to want to listen to what I have to say? Because you kind of like, if the skills coach and that, it's, you're kind of like out of the scenes, behind the scenes, right? Like, you know, you kind of work with the guys every day, but it's the head coaches and the assistant coaches that are, you know, are the ones there, but you're in there with the guys on an individual level. And so I learned a ton from the Sedin twins, you know, Kesslers, like even, you know, goalie coaches. I got to work with Roy Melanson and Dan Kluche and Ian Clark. And it's like, okay, what do you guys see? What are the goalies looking at? And, you know, build drills with them. So just taking it all in and learning was the biggest thing. And, you know, and never thinking I knew it all. You know, it's like, there's other ways and they're just as good. I just happen to do things this way. And I always tell, you know, kids, like, if this doesn't fit with what you want or how you see things, then I'm probably not the right guy to work with. Yeah. And I'm okay saying that. And that's fine. And it's like, hey, you're still a great guy. I don't hold against you. And it's like, you know, even you're recruiting for your hockey team. It's like, well, for whatever reason, a family, that's a better fit. Hey, all the best to you, man. You got to make whatever decision is best for your family and that individual hockey player. And I don't know, just, I just want players to develop and have the most success they have, wherever that is. And if I can be a part of that, great.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like it's the building the trust aspect, right? I think, it's especially huge. At that NHL level, right? And it sounds like that your approach was the way you built trust. You know what I mean? That they were involved in the process. You took what they wanted and you built it into a plan. They had input on it, and then you go out and execute. And then it sounds like, and I was going to ask you that, and you answered what your expertise was, but you kind of answered the question how I thought maybe you might. Like, it's, there's such this emphasis on the drill. And I mean, and you know, coaches, even minor hockey level, well, give me some drills. Okay. Well, I can give you drills, right? Yes, like,
no,
and maybe they're good drills or they're not great drills, but it's like, what's happening inside of that time, or what are you picking out of that drill to help this player be better? Right. And it sounds like maybe that's like your secret sauce and your special gift is to be able to see what that player is doing, to be able to recognize that potentially it's incorrect or there's an alteration that can help them. And then you help them apply that.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, and that to me, that's the art of it. That's the beauty of it. And it's like, you could have a great drill, but if it's not run right and the details and the habits aren't there in that drill, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so, and that's something I learned again from like Taves and I. We would, you know, like I said, we had that relationship where if he didn't like something, he told me, you know, I was like, and we would argue about things, which was great. And I always remember, again, I think it was when he came back from winning a Stanley Cup, and I was like, oh man, like, this is legit now. Like, I need to have great drills. And I remember putting all this complex skills in it, and he couldn't quite get it. And he was getting all pissed off and mad at me. And I was like, why is he getting mad at me? He can't do the drill. But then he said something. He's like, well, that's really game ready. And I was like, went home that night. I was like, what? You know, like, that was a great drill. It's like, not my fault. It didn't go well. And I was like, well, yeah, it was my fault because I didn't teach the different aspects of that skill we were working on. So I just threw him a drill. It had everything in. It's like, hey, go do it. And it's like, yeah. Well, no. There's a step to it. There's a step and there's a progression. And so again, like I learned from these players and it's like, yeah, man, you got to build those progressions. And it's like, so like a catch and shoot we worked on one summer is like, we spent hours just working on him catching a pass in the right spot. And it's like, that's what he wanted to do. And that's what those great players will do. Just his hands in the right spot and his footwork. That was it. Not even shooting it.
Yeah. What a great lesson.
And then we built on it and built on it. And so that's kind of the beauty of it, the part I love about it. So.
Take one more short break from the podcast here just to remind you about the Peak Potential Hockey Project, which is the signature mindset training program that Up My Hockey offers. It's been in circulation now for over 3 years with over 500 graduates and with some real breakthrough type stories. The more you want to listen, the more you have your ear to the ground. You don't have to go very far to hear how mindset development and mindset support is one of the biggest difference makers for players at the highest level, let alone junior athletes or minor pro athletes or youth athletes. This is being recognized as the fundamental piece that is almost always being missed. Now, if you can find a proven program with somebody who has shown to get results before, this is, in my mind, a no-brainer. Again, I'm all about supporting what I have here as far as services and products, but it's not just about what I have. You are on the Up My Hockey podcast right now, so you have listened to me at some point in some context. If you think what we discuss on this program here would be beneficial to your athlete, or if you are an athlete listening, if this is something that you haven't explored before, you need to get involved. Whether it is with me and whether it is with my program, that is not my biggest concern. My biggest concern is that you recognize the value in training your mindset and getting involved in your personal development. Hockey is much bigger than just the skills you use on the ice. We have to think about recovery from mistakes. We have to think about the mindset around growth and development. We have to think about our communication skills when it comes to dealing with our teammates or with our coaches. We have to think outside the box when it comes to how can we maximize our practice and what that involves when it comes to what goes on between our ears. There are so many facets of mindset that I couldn't even explain them all here. And for each player, there's going to be different ebbs and there's going to be different highs, like things that you're going to need to focus on, things that are maybe blind spots for you that you didn't even know existed. Now, if we can take away those blind spots, if we can give you ways to train with some tools, we can shift your perspectives and your belief system around some of these things. That is the biggest opportunity for growth, period. End of discussion. What you don't know, you don't know. So if you have not been involved in it, you need to get involved in it. You need to get curious about it, especially if you have big goals and dreams. Because building a team and taking your holistic development as an athlete is crucial. If you want to try and do your best, and when you walk away from the game, at whatever point that be, whether that be an NHL Hall of Fame career or whether that be 5 games as a junior player, you want to be able to say, I went all in. I went all in. I got the most out of me that I could. Regrets stink, right? You don't want to have those regrets. You want to do what you can. You want to play a big game, and mindset development and looking at that aspect of your training is super important. So the Peak Potential Hockey Project, that's a way to get in to work with me. That is my foundational kind of 101 piece. It's a four-week program. Once you graduate that, you're going to be off to the races. There's so many changes that players see within 4 weeks. Parents coming up to other parents at arenas. What happened to your son? What happened to your daughter? What are they doing? Again, you do not change hockey skills in 4 weeks. You can't change them to that significantly that somebody would come over and say, what happened? But if you change the way the operating system works, you can see growth like that. That is measurable, tangible, visual. And once you take this four-week program, then you have the option to work with me either in a group setting, then you have the option to work with me either in a private setting as a one-on-one client, and the game changes. So by all means, I offer these guided missions, which is small group programs. I launch them not on a regular basis, probably every 4 to 6 weeks. The next one comes up here on April 1st. I think it's a great time of year. Most people are just winding down their season. If you're a youth hockey player, if you are a junior player, you're getting into playoffs. What an advantage to have a little bit extra in the tank here to get you through the biggest time of year. And if you're already done hockey wherever you're at, then this is a great time to start building for this coming season, for the tryout season, for the fall, getting these habits and these concepts down and in place and in a spot where you can practice them without the stress of games and tournaments can be a great time for players to do that. So by all means, check the website for that, the Peak Potential Hockey Project. You can take that either by yourself, like I said, a solo mission. You can take it as a guided mission, which is a small group, or you can take it with me on a one-on-one mentorship version, which is called the Mentored Mission. Those are all available on the website and breaks down everything that the program offers. And again, whether it's my program or whether it's somebody else's, if you are somebody who takes hockey seriously and you want to get more out of the game, more of yourself, have a better time while you're doing it, and potentially even make an impact on others with your example of leadership, then this is something that you should look for. Let's get back to the conversation with Glenn Carnegie. By the way, I played for the Moose, so you keep like, yeah, Scott O'Neill was there when I was there.
I think I just missed you.
Yeah, we did just dismiss each other. Yeah. Randy Carlisle was the head coach at the time. Anyways, yep. What a great, I mean, they were so professional. Like, they were the IHL at the time when I was there, and they yep. were, I don't know if they were affiliated with Vancouver at the time. I can't remember. No, but anyways, it was a great experience. I loved Winnipeg. Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. But anyways, when I was done relatively early. I retired at 30. And so when I came back to play just pickup or men's league, whatever you want to call it, I say this humbly, but I was a bit too good for, for what was going on here to have any fun with it. So yeah. I was like, you know what? Like, I've always really liked goalie. I'm going to be a goalie. So like, I bought all the goalie gear, right?
Really?
And so now I'm out there in men's league and, you know, and obviously I can try as hard as I want, which is important to me, you know, and nobody's getting mad at me because I'm floundering around out there and doing all this other stuff. But why I'm telling you the story is because I was a goal scorer. And now I'm being a goalie. And now being a goalie, I understood what was really hard, right? Oh, yeah. Like how the release can be different, or like moving side to side, or whatever these things were. And I'm like, oh my God, like if I would have known this before, you know, like how much, maybe I get 5 extra a year, you know, or whatever, right? Which in the right league is like millions of dollars, you know?
And it is.
So, anyway, so you talking with the goalie coach, like, of course we should be talking with the goalie coach, because what is 100%. Difficult? How can we bring that into the game, right?
Yeah, and like I remember, I was really blessed. I had Roberto Luongo, Ryan Miller. Like Ryan Miller, he could tell you, like every shooter, what their lie is, what their curve's like, what their pattern is. Like, so I would put together like the shootouts before the game, and he always wanted to go over them, and we watched, and I'd be like, well, why? Like, sometimes a move looks so easy. What was it that he did that goalie bit on? And just to hear their perspective was like a subtle thing. And he was so like dialed into that. Like it was amazing. And then, you know, working with Roberto Luongo, like, and I had Alex Burrows on the ice, like all those guys did. Alex Burrows played rebound, would hunt pucks, rebound. Lou would they competed in battle. And I was like, holy man, like this is unbelievable. And then even like the first kind of skill sessions I did with, I wouldn't put Luongo out because we were doing some like backdoor stuff. And he was like, came up to me, he's like, why aren't you putting me out on the skill sessions? I'm like, well, you're not going to want to do this. My experience earlier was like goalies would always get pissed off because if you're, they don't want to do it. And he was like, well, I'm going to go out and work on what I need. So it's fine. And I was like, okay. So all he'd be like, I'm trying to be as big as I can getting across the ice. And I was just like, man, like that's the mindset. Like that, it was like, I don't care. I'm going to go work on something. I know I'm going to get scored on. But you see so many goalies like, oh, this drill's stupid. Or what do we do? What am I doing this for? It's like, right. I was like, well, Luongo did all the time, man. And he did pretty good. So yeah, talking with the goalies really, really changes your perspective.
Yeah. The funny story, you'll probably, well, I assume you'll find funny. I played with him in Lowell and we had a ping pong table in the room. And we always had the big ping pong tournaments and I was an okay ping pong player. And he was really, he was quite good too. Often we were in the finals and that guy was of course all defense, right? Like long lanky, arms. He would just hit everything just back to me and I'd be trying to smash it. And oh my God, I totally remember those days of Lou just being the eternal backboard.
Might as well flip the board up and play yourself. But
what a great guy too.
Beauty.
When it comes to, and I'm sure people are curious out there, but when you're doing when you're a skills coach for an NHL team and you've kind of, it seems like you've sort of outlined it, but you had like individual plans for most players, would there actually be a skills practice where everyone was on the ice together doing a skills thing? Or would these guys come to you and say, hey, I want to work on X, Y, Z. And then you'd find some extra time for them as well. How would that season look?
It was both. I mean, when I first, and I was with four different coaching staff, so it kind of changed each time. But with Vigneault, it was like, okay, you want a development plan for the team. So we had rapid shot at the time too. So I had a schedule and I would have six players. Three would be doing like green biscuit stick handling in the concourse of Rogers Arena. And three guys were shooting pucks. I would flip it. They were done. And then I would take six guys, usually like, you know, like I would take the first and second line out that day. And then the next day would be like the third and fourth line and the other guys doing this. So I had a plan like that as it progressed. And then when Willie Desjardins was there, we turned it to more focus. We started bringing in a lot of the young guys. So like I had like Bo Horvat, Bertanen, and Sven Barchi was in that group. And so I just more focused on the young guys. So I would take them out pretty much, you know, a couple of times a week before practice for about 20, 25 minutes and work on their individual skills. And then I started doing more video with them as well, like doing game analysis. And it was different from when they would see the other coaches because other coaches are a little bit more systems wise and all that. So they actually would start coming to me because they wanted to see like the skill aspects of it. And then what I would also do is with the young guys, like, okay, like, who do you – like with Bo Horvat, I thought right away he was very similar to Taves in the sense that he was super strong, like good in puck battles. He's a workhorse, you know. Mm-hmm. So kind of put a plan together for him with the skating, with different puck battles, with different puck protection, finding seams. Like with Bo, he was very good winning puck battles. But he wouldn't always see that seam right away. So he wasn't creating the offense that he wanted to. So we just looked at his ozone play and I would kind of see, okay, these five games, you had a total of this many puck touches in the ozone. And then it's a long answer, but I kind of developed a way to, I would try and make it more objective. And I would say like, okay, that's a positive possession. That was a negative possession. And I would set up, he knew that which was which as well.
Yeah.
And so basically, like, let's say he had 50 in the first five games we did, he only had 10 positive puck touches. Well, my focus for him became, okay, let's work on increasing your positive puck touches in the ozone, not worry about points, not worry about anything else. And then it was like, he would be coming. He's like, I had a bunch that night, right? Like he'd be excited about that. And it wasn't about points. It became his habits and his details in the ozone. And once we start doing that, then it's like, okay. And I would show him, here's your negative ones. So this is what we're going to go work on. And now he would see why. And it goes back to the earlier question of getting their buy-in in that.
Right.
But so again, for a long answer, I did individual stuff sometimes with different coaches. I would do a lot of the game day skates as well. We would just do like skill stuff.
Yeah.
And then they became a lot more optional. So I'd have 12 guys and we'd do more like, you know, skill hand stuff, getting reps of shooting. With Vigneault early on as well, we would do a full 45 minutes where it'd be like just a skills practice. Other days it'd be, okay, you're going to take the D's for an hour and then you're going to take the forwards for an hour. So again, it was, it depends on who. And then it was really like certain coaches might come in and say like that morning, just say, okay, Glenn, you're going to go run the skills today. Right. I was like, okay, so I got 5 minutes to prepare then. Yeah. Okay, perfect. So it was a lot of that. And, you just kind of had to adapt and be ready.
And even in that environment, I would assume, some guys have a higher, want or desire, to do that stuff. And some guys are probably more drawn to you than others. So like, is that kind of how it went? You know, like some guys you'd be working more with, not necessarily because you're seeking them out, but just because they were seeking you out. And then the other part of that question I'm going to say is like, when it comes to, some of the younger players, like, would you get assignments? Like, I want him to work on, or I want you to work on this with X player.
Yeah, for sure. And it was kind of like, you know, from the coaches and me, we'd talk about it, right? And like, you know, what do we think he needs to work on? And then especially when I went down to the American League team. So there was probably more like 6 or 8 guys I'd be focused on. And it was, you know, and I did all the video with those guys and the coaches as well. And it's like, okay, what is his individual plan? What are you working on him daily? So when I'm not here, you still have to continue with what our plan is for him. Right. So again, I talk about it all the time now, like you could bring in the best power skater in the world to work with a group of kids for an hour, but they're not going to get anything out of that unless what he's teaching is continually taught again and worked on. So, you know, I think it's so important to teach the coaches so they can see these things with skating, right?
Right.
And they can keep continually building off what you do when you're there as a skills coach. And so it's more than like anyone can, again, go in and run an hour and make it a good skate and that, but it's, if you're truly developing, what are they doing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday when that skills coach isn't there? Because if it's just
Amen. And it's not even, and that's the part where the buy-in for the players, like, you know, you say that to whoever. I mean, it could be junior guys, right? It could be the 14-year-olds. Like when I've just finished breaking down the crossover for you, right? And you're getting to those positions. If you don't do this again till the next time you see me, like you're not much better. But if you go and now deliver this to your practice or you find a little bit extra ice and you remember the key points that I'm trying to emphasize, like that's the difference maker, right?
100%.
That's the difference maker.
Yeah.
Is that a difference that you see from the NHL level players to, let's say you're working with the WHL right now, the best teenage players in Western Canada. What's the difference in that from a skill set and a mindset basis that you see?
Yeah. Well, again, it goes back to what I said. Like I can go in with, let's say the Rockets, and there's some guys who are going to do the, you know, the easy edge work drills, and they're going to take, so when I'm doing it, I'll set it up. So my edge work stuff is a warm up for what I'm going to be doing later. So if it's going to be like delays and turns, well, I want to put them in situations where they're, you know, getting their shoulders in the right spot. They're not leaned over their center of gravity in a turn. So, and you'll see it. So the guys are dialed in. Then when we do it live, they can make those turns and make plays where the other guys are blowing edges. And so it's like, that's where you see it real, real quick. And again, those guys now who are focused on those easy drills or what they think they're too good for, that's mastering the fundamentals. And when you do that, everything else again gets easier. So
NHL guys, are you saying NHL guys are generally better at that as a whole? Like they have a better approach than a junior guy would?
Yeah. And obviously there's always outliers, right? Like but for the most part, it's like they are willing to put in that time on the fundamentals. They'll do what other guys won't do. And often that's the boring stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess another point is like being very self-aware of actually how good you are and not being
or
like,
aren't.
Right. It's like, I'm too good. I don't need to do this. Well, yeah, you do. Like, there's not too many guys in the world that don't need to work on the fundamentals constantly.
And
you know, and the other thing, like, and sorry, I could go on about, I love talking about this stuff. It's like, you know, we're working with athletes predominantly here in Kelowna. It's a pretty small, or Vernon, it's a pretty small bubble in the world, right? Like, it's, you might be really good here playing on your team, but guess what? There's people all over the world, you know, more and more now working on their game and developing. So it's being very self-aware, and, you know, and I think even for parents, like, don't be in such a rush. Understand like where your kids are at and, you know, help them work on those fundamentals more than putting them in situations that they shouldn't be in, that they're not ready for.
Do you mentioned the green biscuits. I got little notes all over my page here. So, and me connecting the dots of like sticking with your head up. This is, I would guess in a teenage brain, this would be a mundane, maybe not fun thing. Yeah. Hopefully it could be fun. Like, that's one of the things I talk to guys about. Like, there's ways to make this enjoyable, I would think. But is that, like, you're saying NHL guys are in the hallway you have working on green biscuits. Like, this should be like a really big aha moment for the casual 14-year-old, right, that still is looking 100%. At the down. Like, what kind of stuff would you have an NHL guy doing in the concourse with a green biscuit?
Well, Ryan Kessler, we did every, like, he sought me out, like, even right before games, we did stuff in the concourse of the arena while guys were playing soccer. He was doing stick hand, and we would do like we've play a game where it's like flipping pucks and knocking it down, and we've kind of made nets, and, you know, it was like getting points for stuff like that. But he worked on it. So even in the gym at Rogers Arena there, we put down some of those fake ice sheets and then made like a nettings, and so guys could stick handle and all that stuff there. And again, it became a big part of that group. And then Kessler was doing it, and then Bieksa came and did it, and then Yannick Hansen came and did it, and more guys started doing it. And it was just, that was the expectation on our team, was like, we're going to work on our game every day. And whether it's on ice, off ice, video, and that's the beauty of what I think Elaine Vigneault was really good at, and the beauty of that team we had, where they all worked, man, like Alex Burrows too, like, and, you know, Ryan Kessler, and that's what they would do. And it was basic, like fake shot, pull it back, you know, pull it, have it on your forehand, out to your backhand, bringing your backhand, getting that top hand out in a shooting position. Like, and it's often easier to work on that stuff off the ice because you're stationary and you're right there in front of him, giving him his little cues. We're on the ice, where he's going down the ice, it's a lot harder to give those little detail teaching cues. But,
and then just the reps you need, right? Like, those are,
it's reps.
Those are the reps, you know, and being able to do that with your head. Again, for some of the kids and just people listening, like, one of the little things I suggest, having a mirror on the wall in front of you, and you're making eye contact with yourself, and you're also trying to look around, just because it can be habitual to get your eyes go down. Right. So it's like, having that eye contact with yourself, doing these things, whether it's a wide stick handle or a pullback, like, it doesn't really matter what it is, but do it again and again and again. Like, that's how you build the skill.
Yeah.
So it becomes automatic.
And you can add, like, you're right, you can add different stimulus to, you know, I would have players kind of just, so, you know, Kessler stick handle, you got other players walking around up to the side of them and like holding up their fingers. So he's calling out. And then we had like these stands that had numbers on it. So he had to be like six, and he's looking, it was five, whatever. Yeah. So adding different stuff like that and off ice is, for me, I think it's great. I think Ryan would say the same, that not only it helped his game, but, you know, he enjoyed doing it. It became part of his game day routine. And, you know, him and I he worked on his game, man. He was a guy that if I didn't put him out on the ice, he was like, why aren't I going out? Like, why you don't want to work with me? Like, right. I was like, and then he just would come out. He's like, no, I'm working on my game. And that guy, man, they're workhorses. And Alex Burrows, same way. And that's what made that team so fun to work with. And they had a lot of success.
That's so great. And I try and tell the younger guys, and I think it's good for them to hear. You know, Stacey Roos came out. He's a local guy here. I'm sure, obviously, you know him. Yep. And he'll come out and help out in some skill development stuff here. And he did a couple things with my team. And he did this, you know, relatively basic fundamental stick handling progressions, end-to-end, right? Lines, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. But he ended up telling them at the end of the session, he's like, Kucherov does this for 10, 15 minutes before every practice.
Yeah.
And it was stuff that, like, you know, a rep 12-year-old, some of the guys were like, oh, okay, yeah, head up and sculling, you know, stick handling, you know? Same thing that the WHL guy will be like, oh, I see 12-year-olds do this. This is so stupid, right? It's like, no, it's not stupid. Like, this 100%. Is like the best in the world does this on a daily basis so he can still get better or stay sharp, however you want to put it. And I think that's the... that's the message that doesn't get old. And I don't think that these kids can hear enough is that's what's happening. That's how they stay relevant. That's how they
the guys, improve. Like even you see in Detroit, like Datsyuk and Zetterberg, they used to play like one-on-one keep away every day. And guys even, what was his name now for Detroit? That was so good at deflections. And
Holmstrom.
Holmstrom. Like you would see him in practice or game day skates when they're in van and literally he's there. Boom, boom, boom. Like, hundreds of shots and they do that every day. And also part of my job, a lot of it wasn't always teaching. Sometimes it was just providing reps. It's
being the guy to shoot the puck, right?
You know, if they want to work at one timers, I'm going out and giving them not bad passes. I always like JT Miller always said, if you give them, because especially early on, you're out there, you give a guy a bad pass and they're on you a little bit. And you start overthinking those passes a lot. But I always remember JT Miller, one day I was like, sorry about those passes, man. He goes, Glennie, I get paid a lot of money to catch your shitty passes. So it's like, I was just like, yeah, you're right, man. I'm not going to worry about my passes. But just the way he said it too, I was like, and too bad he wasn't there earlier in my career, but like, you know, it was just, but it's so true. It's like, don't worry about it, man. I got it.
Yeah. What a great mindset again. Right.
Yeah.
That's one of the best lines I ever heard. I can't remember who said it, but earlier in my career, a guy said, you can't give a good player a bad pass.
That's right. Yeah. It's classic. Yeah.
Classic. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one to end on. I think really appreciate it. Could probably shoot the shit here all day. I
love for sure.
And hockey, and especially somebody that's been around it as long as you have. And
man,
and testament to you too, obviously, what you were doing there in Vancouver, just to go through four coaching regimes and GMs and everything else. There's obviously must have been something that you were doing right there. Yeah, so
there's something.
Yeah, there's something, which is awesome. Yeah. I love the story too, the Genesis story, you know, like, I think there's a great message there to everyone else out there too, right? It's not necessarily where you're starting from, but it's just your dedication to it and your willingness to get better at it.
And I think there's a great book too, Robin Sharma. It's Lead by Example Leaders Have No Title or something. I read it back in those days, but it was basically all about, doesn't matter where you are in life or whatever, it's be the best you can be, and you know, it's going to lead to good things. So.
Yeah. And good. And it's led to good things, and you're helping kids now. It's come full circle, and great to have you in the Okanagan. And thanks for sharing all your wisdom here with my audience. So really appreciate your time today.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thank you for sticking around for the entire episode. I'm sure it wasn't very hard. He was a great guest. Glenn, thank you for being here. If you happen to be listening to this, we will chat again soon, I am sure. Wish you nothing but the best. It's great when we have good people in the Okanagan Valley. There are a lot of options. There are a lot of good people here to support. And it's no surprise that there are so many NHL athletes that decide to spend summer in the Okanagan Valley. Because there are good trainers here. This is a great climate. There are great access to services. And they're all a bunch of great hockey players to be training with. So love the fact that Glenn's here and building that
building that repertoire of great service providers here in the Okanagan Valley. And no matter where you are at, I think it is important to seek out the best team that you can, whether that be your physical skill set, whether that be your mental skill set, whether that be off-ice training in the gym. You need to take your team seriously. That is one thing. The more that I'm in this business, the more that I work with elite players, the more that I talk and listen to elite players, they have a support group. They have somebody to help them get better. High performance is about that mentality, about how do I squeeze the lemon, which is me, and get all the juice out of this. You are not an expert on everything about high performance. We try to make you an expert on you. That's one thing I talk about, is building your personal operating manual. How do you get the most out of you, and how do you make yourself tick? That is something that a lot of people have blind spots about. That is something that we're not apt to do naturally. So figure yourself out. Get someone on your team that's going to help you figure yourself out, that's going to support you with your goals and with your dreams. Get good skill guys around you. Get good guys in the gym around you. This all doesn't have to be done through money either. I know maybe parents listening right now is like, oh, that's money. That's dollar sign. That's a dollar sign. With social media now, there are so many good people that you could follow, that you could be a student of, that is completely cost-free, that you can apply on your own. And sometimes I find the people that are curious enough, that do have the passion about their own development, sometimes that is the athlete that absolutely blossoms the most, because they aren't having their hand held everywhere they go. They are taking complete ownership of their own development. They are sourcing out people that make sense for them, and they're applying stuff in their own garages and in their own basements and on their own track program, without somebody there yelling at them and telling them to be there. It's not necessarily about doing the absolute perfect program designed ideally for you. A lot of it is just about the application and willing to go out and execute. So don't overthink your development, but definitely build the team of experts around you, whether that be somebody that you work with privately that you're actually paying money for, whether that be somebody on social media or on YouTube or wherever the heck you're going to look, that you're going to find and say, okay, this makes sense to me and I'm going to use this for me. This is what I need. Lots of ways to go about your development, but at the end of the day, you are the owners of it. So take it seriously, have fun while you're doing it, and until next time, play hard and keep your head up.